Hey, everybody. This is co-host Robert. On FMD Classic, this week you're in for a treat. This is a rebroadcast of Forgot My Dice Episode 11, titled The Internet is for Hate and Cons Are for Love. This is the biggest episode of the FMD podcast ever, due to our delightful interview with game designer extraordinaire Rob Wieland. As always, content is a year old and covers news and topics that have long since happened. But feel free to check out the show notes on ForgotMyDice.com and come and join us on the Forgot My Dice podcast Facebook group.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast, episode 11. And with me, as always, across the table from me, the I can't go with a Star Trek one.
Am I the Keiko to your O'Brien?
No. You're my Odo to my Sisko.
They're not really buddies. That's more like Kira and Sisko.
Yeah, that is kind of a stretch.
Odo to Quark, we'd be more contentious.
Depends on the episode.
O'Brien to Bashir.
There it is. Well, did I ever say your name? No, I did not. Mr. Robert Lundgren.
You got it right.
Robert Lundgren, how are you doing?
Hello.
And on the phone with us all the way from, are you in Minnesota or Wisconsin right now?
He said Wisconsin. Yeah,
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mr. Rob Wieland, author of many an amazing RPG. Rob, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. I'd like to thank you guys for having me on board the show. I'm really excited to talk about a bunch of different projects. So thanks for coming out. Like, game designers love to talk about their stuff and rarely get a chance to do it in a public forum that isn't the internet where people are telling us that we suck. So I appreciate you offering me this opportunity.
That is the weird thing about feedback in the nerd sphere. Like, back when I had my shop, I knew comic books were good if I didn't hear anything about them. Like, people's like, how's this comic? It's like, well, no one's come up to me and ranted about it, so it's probably pretty good.
I tell people that the internet is for hate and cons are for love. Like, that's why you go to a convention, because people are more apt to walk up to you and be like, oh, you did that thing, I love that thing, and that makes you feel good. And then you kind of have to, like, parcel that out during the cold winter months on the internet, when
you file that one away,
like,
and just
no,
slice it up
terrible.
Like a good loaf of bread. It's like, yeah, I'll just have that
right.
Slice today.
Right.
I'll have this little sliver of happiness.
Right. Well, of course, you're here to talk to us mainly about Kaiju Incorporated, the RPG, which is coming out soon.
Mm-hmm. Soon-ish, yes.
Have we determined if it's real soon, Blizzard soon, or Valve soon?
I think they're targeting February for the release.
Ooh, that's real soon. We're going to learn a lot more about Rob and all of his amazing projects a little later on in the show. But first, Robert.
Department of Corrections. I goofed.
Yeah,
last
hand slap. The hand slap.
I caught myself, by the way. This was in the show notes before we aired, so ha. I mentioned the book The Grand Melee by Evil Beagle Games, and we went off at length about their wonderful logo.
Yeah, that logo is dope.
I mentioned that they had a Pathfinder version, and I was wrong! They have a Savage Worlds, they have a 5th edition, they have a generic, and they have a Hero System version. Hero System, not Pathfinder, my bad, I screwed up.
Robert?
Yeah?
Hand out?
I'm not gonna let you slap my hand.
Hand out.
No.
Hand out.
No, are you a nun? Is this the Blues Brothers? Like, no.
Do I have a ruler?
I don't know. I can't
see
what's under the
desk. I'm not nearly that mean.
Don't slap my hand. He just clapped. That's okay. We should get the sound effect and just wah, 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 wah.
I might be able to do that in post.
And one more thing, the long simmering review that I wrote, I think we talked about like 5 episodes ago. Like, I'm deep into this review of The Adventures of Middle-Earth role-playing game. Yeah, I finally got that on the website.
Congratulations.
After a mere 17 days of it sitting there and me going like, I'll just take the picture of the cover tomorrow.
Well, before we get too deep into anything else, let's go ahead and get off the shelf going. And this, of course, is our bi-weekly segment where we tell you all the wonderful things that we've had off the shelf, which sadly is going to be very short today because Robert and I have both been incredibly busy with real life stuff. So before we get there, Rob, why don't you tell us, have you had an opportunity to play or read or watch any awesome movies lately?
I feel like I've mostly been catching up on PS4 games lately.
Well played.
Like I just finished my second playthrough of Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, that's good fun.
The Definitive Edition, so I finally got to play all the DLC stuff, like the Zodiac Tournament and the zombie level and things like that.
That game really surprised me. It actually had a really quite well-written story.
Mm-hmm. I really like the story, and I feel like that's one of those games that even after I'm done doing all the stuff that they have, I just want to kind of wander around and get the kung fu fights and, you know, whatever. Like, it's a great, solid beat-em-up style game.
So I kind of spaced out a little bit, because you're talking about a game I haven't played and know literally nothing about, and then I was back on board when I heard kung fu fights.
Yeah, so Sleeping Dogs is a sandbox game, kind of similar to Grand Theft Auto, except it takes place in, where was it? I can't remember off the top of my
head. Hong Kong.
Yes, exactly.
It takes place in Hong Kong, and it's basically a mashup of every Hong Kong cop action movie that you've ever seen.
Except, you know, written with a more Western slant. So it's a comprehensible story with John Woo action.
I'm on board.
It's cool. It's a really fun game.
Repeat the name of that game, because, like I said, Sleeping Dogs. Because I spaced out, because I was like, this is a game I haven't played.
And I think I got into playing that because I've been going through, I have a one-year-old daughter, and one of the easiest types of films to watch with her are movies with subtitles, because that way, if she falls asleep, you can turn the movie down, and you don't have to worry about, you know, waking up the kid. So we've been going through a lot of the Shaw Brothers kung fu movies that are up on Netflix and Amazon Prime. And so, you know, I've finally gotten to watch like Five Deadly Venoms and Duel of the Death and all these, you know, classic kung fu films. My Sleeping Daughter, like, nearby. I think that's what kind of got me in the mood to go through Sleeping Dogs again. On the RPG front, I just finished a one-shot of the new version of 7th Sea, which I really enjoyed. And I'm very excited to see the direction that the second edition is going.
Oh, yeah. We did a review of 7th Sea, and we are both huge fans of it. We loved it. Anything else, Rob? Have you had any board gaming or movie fun? Other than the wonderful kung fu?
Played a little bit of Mansions of Madness.
Yes.
I also got to play the Conan Kickstarter game, which I actually enjoyed more than I thought I was going to.
So I have that sitting on my shelf, and I have not had a chance to play it yet. So it's awesome?
I really like it because the way that you take actions, you basically spend energy to take actions, really gets the feel of a Conan story, because there are some turns when you have all of your energy and you spend it all and you're like, I'm cutting everybody's head off. And then there are turns where you have nothing and you're the bad guys are closing in and you're like, I am going to die sad and alone. It was a lot of fun having the game feel like the thing that you're doing is really important. It felt like a Conan story, and that's, I think, the highest praise that I can give it.
Especially that's what it was shooting for, so that's always good. Well, how about you, Robert? I know that you haven't had an opportunity to do a ton lately.
Yeah. Haven't read much, haven't done much.
Your kids are in that kind of weird spot right now where they need a lot more care than normal, but they're about to become slightly more independent.
Well, I found out that my middle son, I guess technically, because he's a minute older, Miles, has a crush on Idina Menzel. Is that her name? Am I screwing up like John Travolta did? So we were just playing random things, and my wife was watching the Beaches remake, and that stupid song came on, and I noticed he, like, perked up. And I'm like, and one day he was crying, and I'm like, he perked up during this one song. Quick, YouTube, help me! And man, he started, like, watching her and smiling. I'm like, wow, my kid has a crush on... And it's not, did I ever tell you you're my hero song? It's just any video where you can see her face singing, he's got like interested face and he just like smiles and it is adorable.
There you go.
So there we go. So I've listened to a lot of Idina Menzel. Barefoot at the Symphony. That is a staple at the house at the moment.
This is one of those moments where I'm glad my children are older.
Yeah, they get fixated on weird, weird things when they're young. A buddy of mine told me his son at about that age was really into Shakira for some reason. So
see, I got lucky. My youngest was he went through a Chemical Brothers phase, then he went through a Prodigy phase, and then he switched hardcore over to Rage Against the Machine. Which always put him to sleep. Go figure.
Yeah, no. My eldest, same thing.
No rage against that machine. That was like a lullaby.
Rob, you got a one-year-old. any music that is oddly soothing to your child?
So...
How about that Snoop Dogg, right?
Actually, David Bowie's last album, Black Star.
Oh! Like,
oh my God. That's kind of dark.
That's heavy, man.
It is, but it came out right around when she was born last year, and so I was listening to it and crying, and... But it would put her out, and even now, like when you play it, she kind of looks like, this is familiar. This is interesting. What is this? So
and then promptly,
yeah,
just out. Nice. So I've been going through my Star Trekking. I cut a swath through season one very, very slowly, and then season two came and went really fast. Now I'm in season three already, which is fun.
Of Next Gen?
Of Next Gen, yeah.
You're about to pass me up.
I know, I'm almost at the point where I gotta start using that website to do the chronology.
Just to let you know, Rob, we are both in the process of watching Star Trek from start to finish in chronological order.
And I'm going full crazy. Nice. I'm going to do it by stardate, so I'm going to start hopping through all the various series and movies as they appear in this timeline that I found on the internet.
I'm about halfway through season four, and it sounds like Robert's about to pass me up because I have not been able to keep up. Well, I too have had a sad dry spell these last couple of weeks. It's just been so busy. I got a chance to play King of New York. And
again, because you played
again,
it.
Yeah.
Is this with your boy?
This was with my oldest and my wife, and we all sat down and played again, and it was super fun. And just, it's King of Tokyo with a few more rules to make it a little more gamery. And it totally works in that respect. Rob, being, you know, that you have this deep love of kaiju, have you played King of Tokyo or King of New York?
I have. I played King of Tokyo a couple times, and I really dig it. I also had, I think I still have a copy somewhere of Monsters Ravage America, which
Ooh.
I always really kind of enjoyed. Because you play the monster, but then you would also play one of the armed forces that... for the other players, and like when they need to send in the Marines, you'd be the Marines for the other players. That was always a ton of fun to play too.
If you haven't tried it yet, King of New York is pretty awesome too. It just adds a couple more rules. You can use all of your King of Tokyo knowledge and then just add a couple things, and it's really fun. And it's got this great mechanic where there's buildings in each of the boroughs, and you can smash the buildings to regain health and whatnot. But when you do, you flip the tile over, and on the other side of the tile are military units that attack you.
Nice.
It's, you know, kind of a risk versus reward. What else did I play? Oh, my sister and I sat down, and we whipped out a game from our youth. Have you ever heard of Payday?
No.
Oh, yes. Rob, have you ever heard of Payday?
Vaguely, isn't it? Paycheck to Paycheck, the board game, right?
Yeah, basically. The board itself is a calendar, and it's got all kinds of terrible things on it, like paying bills and, you know, trips to the mailbox. And inevitably, the mailbox is a deck of cards that consists primarily of bills. And you're basically just trying to balance your budget and make money. Well, as it turns out, it's still fun, but it's fun because we have really good memories of the game. It's not fun from a gameplay perspective. And also, you can totally, totally, totally manipulate the game because there is a savings and loan aspect to it. So I took out a huge loan at the beginning of the game. I bought up a bunch of properties and investments, and then you start cashing them out real fast, and you shove all that money into the bank, and then you're making tons of interest because it's 10% interest off of your whatever you throw in for the savings.
Wow, that dates it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I believe the original game was 1978 or 79.
Wow.
Yeah, it shows it. And it's roll and move.
Should we do the patented flip the table steal of surprise?
So, yeah, and that is it. That's all I've had a chance to play other than some Star Realms on the iPad.
Did you get caught up with Flash and Supergirl and all that?
I am so far behind, it's not even funny. So sadly, that's all that we've had off the shelf this week.
Rob, did we jog your memory of anything?
No, I'm still...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like we're dealing with three very busy people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've had off the shelf. Coming up after a short break will be the Wisdom of Crowds, our bi-weekly news and Kickstarter segment. And now a quick message from our sponsors, Geek Nation Tours. And what an amazing tour they've got coming up at Gen Con 2017, which is, of course, the 50th anniversary of Gen Con. Now, along with hanging out at Gen Con, which is epic in and of itself, this tour is going to have a zombie theme. You're going to get a chance to meet Mantic Games, creators of the Walking Dead All-Out War game. You're going to get an opportunity to play with Hunter Games Outbreak Undead, which is an epic game where you're actually going to have an opportunity to try and survive a real-life zombie apocalypse as you try to return to the hotel from the convention center. Along with all this, you'll also get an opportunity to play the game Zombies, the game Zombie Dice, and you'll get a chance to try out the new Steamforged Games Dark Souls board game based on the amazing video game. So to learn all about that and so much more, head on over to geeknationtours.com and take a look at what's available. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/forgotmydice. We post all our articles there, so feel free to comment. Or you can message us directly via the Facebook Messenger.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at ForgotMyDice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on the Twitter. Find us at ForgotMyDice.
You can join us on the Freebooter Network message boards. Find your way there by going to FreebootersNetwork.com and click on the Freebooters Forum.
If you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give the Freebooters Network a review on iTunes.
Lastly, for those of you listening from the depths of interstellar space, make sure you turn your controls 18 degrees to the left and flip the intensifier disc on and off again.
Interstellar space?
Yeah, they listen to podcasts on interocitors.
And now it's time for our tabletop news and Kickstarter news section, The Wisdom of Crowds. And first up, Robert, is something you added. It's D&D is going to HasCon.
Yes, so a couple episodes ago, we talked about HasCon, and I was like, is D&D going to be there? Is D&D not going to be there? Because they didn't really say. So it got confirmed. Wizards updated their convention schedule, and indeed, they are going to be at HasCon. So running around with all the aficionados of Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony, Magic the Gathering, all of Hasbro's successful properties, you're going to be able to play D&D there too, which is awesome.
You know, I think this shows that just how okay it is becoming for people to play RPGs. You know, it's slipping out of this niche genre and into a more mainstream situation. I think that telling of tabletop gaming in as a whole. Rob, what do you think?
I think that 5th edition has been wildly successful as an ambassador for tabletop games. One of the events that I do locally is an event called Dungeons and Dragons and Drinking, where people come to hear about D&D, meet other people who play D&D, and kind of mix and mingle and you know, try to find a group out of it. And that's how popular it is that, you know, people ask me, well, how do you find a group all the time? And because of the success of 5th edition, it's easier than ever between people wanting to try it out and people getting back into it and people who are playing Adventurers League. And there are just so many outlets that people can connect with it now. I feel like whatever damage that was done by the Satanic Panic in the 80s and sort of now that a lot of the people who play D&D matured and understand it and are kind of wanting to go back to it, I think a lot of that negative press is going away, and that sort of perception of, oh, it's some weird thing that you do with other nerds in the basement that you don't like to talk about is going away. I mean, one of the most popular articles I did for Geek and Sundry was positive on-air portrayals of Dungeons and Dragons, and I talked about how it showed up in Community and how it's shown up in the It crowd and how it's shown up in Stranger Things and all these shows that showed D&D not in a haha look at these nerds kind of light, but in a no, this is something that normal people do and have fun, and you know, it's not any weirder of a hobby than any of the other hobbies that people have. So I think there really is kind of a renaissance right now of people who want to learn it and people who want to play it and becoming more and more acceptable.
Robert and I often talk about how the nerds have kind of won the war and we're now getting our day in the sun. And I'm glad you brought up Stranger Things, because ever since Stranger Things was on, I have had so many more friends coming to me that normally are not part of the whole tabletop gaming movement, and they're asking me, hey, you know, can you walk me through this? How do I play this? What do I need to try this? It's really interesting how popular media has influenced this in a positive direction. All right, now next up is something that is close to home for me, and that is that Star Wars Destiny is getting a new set of booster packs coming soon. Fantasy Flight announced it. It's called Spirit of Rebellion, and it's a bunch of additional cards and characters from the Star Wars universe with a primary focus on Rogue One. We're going to get Jyn Erso, and we're going to get Chirrut Iwe. Based on the art that they've released so far, it looks like we also get the unnamed stormtrooper from Force Awakens, TR-8R.
Traitor hero. Nice.
It looks phenomenal. The few cards and dice that they have released so far as teasers look awesome, and Palpatine's going to be in it.
So, Jonathan.
Yes?
Real soon? Blizzard soon? Or Valve soon?
Real soon. This is FFG. They're like a machine.
So we've narrowed it down to probably a quarter?
Yeah, a quarter. Which, okay. You know.
Q2? Q1?
A quarter when compared to Valve soon is you know.
Half-Life 3, anybody?
Now, Rob, have you had an opportunity to try Star Wars Destiny yet?
I've not played Star Wars Destiny. I'm fairly deep into X-Wing, and I've gotten... I have the main set for Imperial Assault. I have to be careful with the FFG Star Wars stuff, because it's very easy for me to be like, okay, I'll just buy it all then. and what's interesting, the people that I know who have played Destiny have all had the similar reaction of like, oh man, this game is fun. Buy it
now. Now, Robert, what's next on our list? This is something that you are definitely interested in. Relic Knights is getting a second edition.
Yeah, and who would have thought? Because that game kind of faded away after the Kickstarter debacle. I got in on it. I have a faction. And I showed you my miniatures. I brought them over the other day.
They're really cool looking, actually.
Yeah, they are really fun miniatures. So, not much is known yet. I played the rules. I didn't really have any problems. There were a few things, but I was like, it wasn't anything that Errata couldn't fix. There were just really weird little minor things. But no, the rule set was fun. The models are fun. Hopefully this one will gain a little bit more traction than the first go-around, because the models for it are really neat. It's basically anime, the miniature game. So there's different factions. They're sort of all based on anime tropes. I got into Black Diamond because I was like, if this game fails, futuristic science fiction miniatures are always something or maybe not always, because I tend to play a lot of fantasy, but it's probably something that'll come up eventually, so I will have backups.
And look, you've been using them recently.
I have been. So there you go. Relic Knights 2nd Edition. The 32nd, Relic Knights is a miniature war game. Like I said, anime, factions. Not going to go into the factions because I don't remember them right now. The resource mechanic is, instead of rolling dice, you have a deck of cards, which is kind of like Magic's mana. There's 6 different colors of, I think it's called Esper, and you use those to power your abilities. So you get a hand of cards, and you spin cards out of your hand, and there you go. That is how you play the game. Instead of rolling dice, you just chuck down cards. And if you don't have enough, you know, mana or Esper or whatever to use your ability, then you can't use it that turn, and you move on.
So, Rob, have you ever had an opportunity to mess around with Relic Knights?
I've not messed around with Relic Knights, but I think that Kickstarter is very good at getting games out there that have massive fistfuls of plastic, that even if the game itself is not great, you still have so many miniatures that, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter if the game is really good or not. Like, because there are so many Kickstarters out there that where you're like, wait, I get how much? Oh,
okay. I backed recently from Cool Mini or Not, I backed Massive Darkness, and my thought process on it was, all right, cool, if the game is awesome, that's great, I get an awesome game, but at the very least, I'm getting enough fantasy miniatures that I will never ever have to scrape for a D&D miniature again.
I have friends who are literally like, I'm going to have to put my Reaper Minis Kickstarter in my will because I will never paint these and we'll have to hand them down through generations.
You're not
because
kidding.
I'm going to get all these things.
I'm looking at my others Kickstarter on my shelf and it's just literally over 200 minis. I don't know how I would ever get to them all. Now, last up in the news, this one is something that I don't know. It seems to straddle the line between absolutely ridiculous and yet strangely appropriate given our modern weird times. And that is that PETA has decided to take offense because Games Workshop is using characters, fictional characters.
It's not quite that bad. PETA UK sent a letter to Games Workshop, and they asked them kindly to stop putting fur on the miniatures, or at least depict futuristic space marines and demons from wearing fur.
So let me see if I can kind of like encapsulate this into a single sentence. So PETA is concerned about fake marines that live 38,000 years in the future wearing fake fur.
And exploiting animals because of space wolves.
Exploiting animals in their fictional universe. Does that about wrap it up?
That about wraps it up.
All right.
Yeah, I
feel like there's a better way to chase down your passion there, you know? I'm all for PETA. I have no problem being nice to critters. I love critters, but there's got to be a better way there.
Yeah, part of me is thinking this is a publicity stunt, and, you know, sure enough, it was trending on my Facebook page today, so enough people are talking about it. And I've heard it. I had my writing partner's dad linked it on my wall. Like, have you heard of this? And I'm like, yes, actually, it's been going through my circles all day. So it worked. We're talking about PETA on a podcast now, so congratulations. We fell for it.
Rob, did you see this?
I did. And like you said before, I think it's kind of another example of the nerds of one, that like PETA feels that they can make some headlines by requesting this. You know, why not? Games Workshop is such a huge company overseas that it makes sense for them to try and connect themselves that way.
If it furthers their cause, I suppose that's good for them. I don't know. When I first saw the news, I thought it was an Onion article. I truly did. It just seems so ridiculous.
I agree.
Next up, we're going to move over to Kickstarters, and we've got some good stuff here. The first is Dusk City Outlaws, the RPG. Now, Robert, you wanted to add this one. Talk to me about it.
Dusk City Outlaws is a tabletop role-playing game inspired by Leverage, Ocean's 11. So basically, yeah, it's fantasy heists. Well, actually, how about we have our guest talk about it? Because he actually knows the dude.
Dusk City Outlaws is designed by Rodney Thompson, who designed some parts of D&D 5th Edition. He worked on doing Star Wars Saga Edition together. And he also designed a little board game called Lords of Waterdeep that you may have heard of.
Oh, yeah. We talk about it regularly
yes,
on the show
do.
Because it's just that go-to that never gets old.
Yes.
What I like about the design is that it's built in a very pick-up-and-play type of manner. When you make a character, there are cards. You basically choose one card represents the cartel, which is the criminal organization that you're a part of. Each criminal organization kind of has their specific focus as far as like there's like the family, which is kind of the like Italian mafia style crime family, or there are the grave diggers who handle, you know, burying the dead and kind of getting secrets out of them that way. There's the Red Lotus Society, who have the market cornered on firearms in the city. And then you choose sort of your character specialty, which is like you're an assassin, or you're an alchemist, or you're the boss. And mushing those two together give you what your capabilities are in the heist part. And the system is very simple. You roll percentiles, but then you also roll, I don't think these are the official terms, basically advantage and drawback dice. They're very similar to the threats and advantages from
Star Wars
FFG Star Wars thing. Like basically, they're basically pluses and minuses. So roll the percentiles to see if you succeed or fail, and then the other dice give you other stuff that happened that the GM kind of interpret that and go, oh, well, you succeeded, but you rolled a bunch of disadvantages, so you did the thing, but there are these other problems you have to deal with. Or, oh, you failed, but you rolled a bunch of advantages, so you didn't do the thing, but this other stuff might help you out in the future.
I love systems like this. I'm a big, big fan of the Star Wars FFG system, and that's one of the major reasons why. Because I think from a storytelling aspect, it gives a lot more flexibility. And I think that from engaging your players, it gives them more of an opportunity to shape the story.
And one of the things that Dusk City Outlaws does is it has a resource called Heat, which represents your criminals. And people know you're criminals, so you know the city watch is watching you. Your enemies are watching you, and that heat builds up as you do stuff preparing for the heist. And then once the heat builds up, the judge, what they call the dungeon master, spends those points to introduce, you know, plot twists and you know, unexpected, you know, all the stuff that you expect from a heist movie. Where
that's a really great mechanic.
Oh, we thought that this vault was filled with, they said it was filled worth of, you know, 20 million gold pieces worth of stuff. we thought it was gold, when in actuality it's, you know, the corpse of a dead king, or, you know, stuff like that, that you're like, what do we do? How do we handle this stuff? The health mechanic is interesting because it's based off of your character's luck, and you can spend your luck to succeed on dice rolls, but once your luck literally runs out, that's when you start taking damage.
That sounds like a lot of
fun. It does look very, very cool, and I'm a backer. I think Rodney is a great designer, and I think that this game will be a ton of fun, because I think that one of his focuses for it was to have the type of game, you know, I want to introduce people to RPGs, but I don't want to... The hardest part of RPGs is the apprenticeship aspect, where you need to know somebody who plays them, and that person kind of has to put their arm around you and explain how the game is. And it's always very challenging when you're like, talk about a game and you're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go on cool adventures. We're going to raid treasures. We're going to scoop up ancient artifacts and defeat clever traps. Awesome. Do you want to do that? Yeah, that sounds great. Now we're going to do an hour's worth of paperwork as you make your character. that's a very hard enthusiasm break that you have to overcome. But a system like this, where you pick two things, you make a couple notes, and bang, you're plotting the heist, you know, is a great way to get people involved.
Absolutely.
All right, so next up, we have something that's in your bailiwick, Mr. Board Gaming Jonathan.
And this is actually something I'm really excited about, because I love the developer. This is from Devil Pig Games, and it's called Age of Towers. It's a tower defense game, and it looks genuinely interesting, because every player gets their own path that they're defending. Devil Pig made Heroes of Normandy.
Okay.
And the Actun Cthulhu version of Heroes of Normandy. And then recently I backed the Heroes of Normandy card game. Which we talked about. I don't know. It looks fantastic. It's got great art. Rob, do you know anything about this one?
This one I am not familiar with, so please enlighten.
Well, it's got a phenomenal art story. All the classic monsters are in it, and basically every single player gets a stack of terrain cards, which form a path, and they also have enemies that are coming at them, and you form a defensive structure on your path, just like the tower defense games that are so popular these days. Every player can choose a faction, and the different factions kind of have different ways that they hold off the enemies, and then the enemies come in a variety of different flavors too. It's all kind of high fantasy stuff, so you've got your giant spiders and your goblins and your orcs and whatnot, and you have a bunch of different towers that you put down, and they're little plastic towers, and they look like great components on in the Kickstarter. You put these towers down on the path, and they have rules that as the enemies pass by, they get murdered.
Yeah. Your classic tower defense systems, yeah. But in a board game format that you can play with your friends at a table.
And it's kind of neat, because every player gets their own set of, you know, it's not like every player is working on the same map. Everybody gets their own map that they build in front of them. And so it's everybody's going to have a unique situation.
What I really find interesting about games like this is that they're trying to, like, it's interesting seeing video games influencing board games, influencing video games, influencing board games.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I find that I prefer games that feel like the thing that they're trying to be. So if this design really feels like a tower defense video game, then that's awesome.
You know, I've got a lot of confidence in the Devil Pig team, because Heroes of Normandy is such a great rule set, and the rule set for the card game was equally as good. So I know that this is a very good team, that they're going to handle it well. So I've got a lot of excitement here. I'm flirting with the concept of backing it right now. To your point, what you were talking about with video games and board games, there does seem to be a recurring loop. I recently got a game on the Xbox that is, what is it called? Hand of Fate. And it is basically a deck builder in video game format. On the other end of the spectrum, you look at all these games, like I just picked up the Doom board game recently, which is based on the video game, and it does a great job of capturing elements of the video game to feel just like it. So it is kind of a reciprocal thing.
So next up, another board game, Jonathan, tell us all about Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea.
So I actually just did an article on For Geek and Sundry about this game. It's from Gamelin Games, who have done the Tiny Epic series of games.
And that's Scott Alms, right?
Yeah. Tiny Epic Kingdoms, Tiny Epic Galaxies, Tiny Epic Western. And this is their sort of veer off into a big box type of project, where this is the game that has a ton of miniatures and like actual buildable towers and actual pieces that you put on the map. And it really looks like we were talking about with the tower defense game, it feels like they're trying to replicate that sort of a halfway point between an RTS like Warcraft and a 4X game like Civilization, where you're building stuff and you're sending dudes out to fight and you're trying to get your kingdom up faster than everybody else.
The components look amazing.
What's interesting is that they've actually had like three tiers of components. Like if you can either get the basic tiers, which will just have like punch out standees as the pieces, the plastic minis that are sort of the regular tier, and then the higher tier, they will actually pre-paint all of the hero figures for you so that the hero pieces stand out on the board and you don't have to worry about painting them.
The boats and stuff, are they made out of cardboard or plastic?
That I don't know.
They look like it's cardboard, kind of like the Vikings on board boats.
Yeah. The way that these Kickstarters tend to go is that Gamelin usually devotes a lot of their stretch goals to improving components. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Kickstarter blew up enough if they upgraded to that sort of credit card plasticky kind of material that like the old Pirates of the Spanish Main ships are made out of. I could see that happening.
Well, it's certainly going in that direction. With 25 days left to go on the Kickstarter, it's already at 115% of goal, or excuse me, 130% of goal. They wanted 100 grand, and they've got over 230 grand already.
I'm digging these factions.
Yeah, the factions are great.
Am I just missing something, or is there no human faction?
No, there is. I think.
I'm just missing something.
Yeah, there's a human faction. What is it? I guess this would be dwarves. This would.
Oh, okay. This is further down. Yeah, the faction packs where they. Yeah. I was just digging like they have the lionkin. So you got your requisite cat people, the undead, lizard folk, and goblins. And I was like, those are some cool factions, and they look pretty.
Yeah, no, the quality of the miniatures based, at least on these pictures on the Kickstarter, look phenomenal. And all of the components look amazing. Yeah, I'm seriously having the acquisition disorder with this one. This looks awesome. And did you see the size of the main board? 39 by 26.
That's an odd size.
Yeah, it's a 3'3" long by 2'2" wide.
Intriguing. I wonder if that's metric or intentional.
I don't know. That's small. That's like bigger than my toddler's. Well, I am seriously considering backing this one. I think this game looks amazing. But yeah, like you were saying, Rob, there are a bunch of different backing levels.
Mm-hmm. The way that the game is structured is once you do one of the end game is triggered when you sort of hit the first player elimination. So I think that's a great way to kind of cut down that sort of slog that these kind of games have of like, oh, well, let's book out 8 hours to play this because it's a strategy game. Like,
or if you are unlucky enough to get eliminated early, it's like, well, guys, I'm going to go get a taco and mm-hmm. if you want anything from the store, I'll be back in an hour and a half. We'll see if you're done then.
Right.
That is Heroes of Land, Sea, and Air, the new Scott Alms game.
Land, Air, and Sea.
Land, Air, and Sea. And by the way, how many games has Scott Alms been pumping out recently? Like, I feel like I can't look at Kickstarter without seeing his name on something. If it's one of the Tiny Kingdom games, he's just on fire right now.
Boom shakalaka. He's on fire.
Wow, you're going for the NBA Jam references.
I know, that's what I do. Last up, my buddy loves this video game, and I have never played it. I know nothing about it, but we're going to bring it up because maybe you've played it and he wants it backed. So here we go. Banner Saga 3 is currently on Kickstarter, and it is obviously the sequel to Banner Saga 1 and 2. I have Banner Saga 1.
Is that how that works?
Yes, how it works. I have Banner Saga 1 on my PlayStation, but I haven't played it yet because I'm a bad, bad friend and didn't play the game that was recommended to me. But yes, go check it out if you're a fan of the series. Complete the trilogy and finish up your story. It is kind of cool. It's this world. You would like this, Jonathan. It's about Vikings.
I have Banner Saga sitting on my hard drive. I just haven't had time to play it.
Well, there you go. You're in the same boat I am. But yeah, and the gods are dead and the world stops spinning and it's post-apocalyptic and yeah, Vikings. Yeah. And the apocalypse. Can't go wrong with that. So I should play that. My buddy keeps yelling at me. So
Rob, you should know that I'm a humongous fan of Vikings. So much so that I've named my dog Ragnar.
That's excellent.
Yes.
I have not played the Banner Saga games, but I do feel the pain of wandering through a Steam sale and being like, why do I buy? I know these games are only like $2, but why do I keep it? Ooh, that game looks good. And then you buy like five more.
Yeah.
Like that's just the nature of the beast.
Oh yeah. This last holiday, I spent about $25 on the Xbox store, but I ended up with like 10 new games because they were all so expensive and discounted. And yeah, my pile of shame grows. It grows so large. And that is it for the Wisdom of Crowds.
Captain, come in. It's a war zone out here. The trolls are about to overrun our position. There's casualties everywhere. No one can have a decent conversation without exploding into flame wars. I understand, sir. The other Mont and I are trying to hold them back, but no matter how many we ban, they just keep coming back in greater numbers. Captain, tell my wife. Free Buddhist Forums, a great place to chat with no trolls and no BS. All gaming, all the time. www.freebuddhas.com.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. So, Rob, you've been kind enough to join us tonight, so now it's time to learn a little bit more about you. And you've got quite the storied past within the tabletop RPG space, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your career leading up to Kaiju Inc.?
I started out many, many, many years ago. The first thing that I had published was reviews for a small website. As a sort of precursor to how the industry goes sometimes, they were kind enough to purchase my badge for Gen Con one year so I could go on their dime and kind of cover it and pick up free games to like review and things like that. And the Tuesday before Gen Con, I got an email from the person who ran the website that said, yeah, we're closing our doors. Enjoy Gen Con. You don't have to do anything. Sorry. And all of my work for that website has long since been scattered to the four winds of the internet. My first paid product that was connected to actual game writing was an article that I did in college for Deadlands. Called it A Tasteful Interlude, and it was about a colony of ghouls that had opened up a steakhouse just outside of Kansas City, and the players stumble upon it and find out that employees are cannibals. That was a ton of fun because I realized early on that if you write a Deadlands adventure, you need to be thinking of it as a Tales from the Crypt episode. And as long as you kind of keep it in that sort of, yes, we're joking, but it's also kind of creepy and scary and bloody, but we're also having fun with it. You know, that was a really good way to kind of grasp the tone of that. My first extended work came out of writing for 7C, or more specifically, the Swashbuckling Adventures part of 7C. You know, got my foot in the door there and worked on that for a very long time. I've also done work for Shadowrun. I've done work for Star Wars Saga Edition.
That's my favorite Star Wars.
Thank you. It's really interesting because, like, I feel like there is a decent split in the community between D6 Star Wars Saga Edition and the Fantasy Flight stuff. Like, it seems like...
Oh, yeah, me and Jonathan kinda... are West Side Story about that here.
Yeah.
He's Fantasy Flight, and I'm all Saga Edition, and we, you know, tie our hands together and fight with, you know, knives or little lightsabers or something.
Vibro knives. Right.
There you go. Exactly. There you go, vibro knives.
But
it totally goes on here between takes. We're just like, no, this one's better.
Well, I had the experience where I was a huge fan of the West End Games one, and I thought, there's no way that anything will ever defeat it. And when I read Saga Edition, I was like, no, this might be it. This is good. This is something that I would consider running and playing. And I reached out to the developer, Rodney Thompson, and was able to do three books of that. And let me tell you, the experience of holding a book in your hands with your name under the Star Wars logo, the birth of my daughter is the only thing that beats that. And I've been able to work on a lot of great licenses like that. I was a line developer for Firefly RPG for Margaret Weiss Press. And that was a ton of fun to be able to touch all the books in some way, shape, or form that came out for that project. I also did some work for Vampire the Masquerade 20th Anniversary Edition. Like, my career has basically been a lot of, I have a ton of these books on my shelf from when I was growing up and playing these games. I should see if I should actually get to be in one of these books. And so far, I've knocked out a lot of targets that I've hit. But it's also been fun delving into the indie side of things as well. Like, my first two projects with Evil Hat were ones that I pitched to them, and they trusted me with it, and they've been really great to work with. So I got to do Camelot Trigger, which is in one of the first Fate anthologies from their big Kickstarter, and that was the Arthurian myth retold with giant stompy robots.
So, looking over your list, you've got some greatest hits. I love The Hill Folk. That's a great game. Masks, I really need to read. I haven't gotten a chance to yet. And Pugmire. Come on, Dog Knights. I don't think it's out yet, is it?
It's coming out very soon. I did the enemies chapter for it. You know, things that would make sense in a dog fantasy world as enemies. We have whispering trees that are kind of there's like a creepy forest which causes the dogs to, you know, maybe bark at them every now and again, like, you know. But also take D&D concepts and reskin them and spin them into stuff that, like, if you look at the badgers, for example, you'll see that they're very much orcs. Part of the fun was spinning the ideas that people have about orcs into something that fits more into the Pugmire world.
So I need you to flash your nerd cred, because I've got opinions on this. I got opinions. I don't know if Jonathan does. I don't know how big.
No, I've got opinions too.
Okay, so show off your nerd cred. What is your favorite Godzilla movie and your favorite non-Godzilla kaiju movie?
My favorite Godzilla movie is Godzilla versus Megalon.
Because Jaguar.
Yes.
That is a.
Yes, Jaguar says up yours. That is. I love that movie. I got into the kaiju films because they were covered by Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is one of my deepest and most expansive fandoms.
You know what's funny about Godzilla vs. Megalon? It was in the I don't know if it was in the Criterion Collection on Hulu, but it was in some sort of collection where they had it in, like, widescreen and with the original, like, subtitles, because I'd only seen it dubbed when I got my crappy VHS copy when I was a kid. And let me tell you, when I was watching it in much higher resolution, I'm like, this movie is beautifully shot. There's really neat models and scene elements here that I just was not getting with the pan scan, and I found it strange that I was sitting here watching this movie. I'm like, wow, like that really dumb sequence in the beginning when the kid's in that that little dolphin paddly thing, and and
I just remembered that scene.
And the vortex opens up in the lake. In the crappy VHS copy, you just see the swirly thing in the lake. And then I didn't notice, but in the beautiful widescreen shot, you see the little model of the kid in the thing, like, desperately trying to get away over the corner. I'm like, this is amazing. There's real drama here now. It was missing. Where has this been all my life? And then, you know, the dialogue's not nearly as corny, because in the original Japanese version, you know, it's not just poorly paid, you know, dubbing guys. It's guys that are playing this straight. They're like putting passion behind their lines, and I was like, wow, this has a lot more angst and stuff that I remember from my childhood. So that was amazing. Good choice, sir. Very good choice.
And I think my favorite non-Godzilla kaiju film, it has to be Pacific Rim. Like,
yes.
I have not seen a movie in the theater like that where I just laughed with joy the entire way through, because it was like, as soon as I thought, oh, dude, it would be so cool if it happened. And you're like, oh my God, they did the things that I thought that they were going to do. And then it just kept hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting. And that movie is one of the inspirations for Kaiju Incorporated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I really like about both the card game and the RPG is that they explore different elements of the same world. RPGs in particular are something of a borrowed media. Most big the biggest RPG of them all, Dungeons and Dragons, borrows heavily from Lord of the Rings and started out as miniatures guys being like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to do Lord of the Rings with our miniatures rules? And that has sort of followed the industry ever since. Like, so many of the great RPGs are ones where you see that they've, you know, taken pieces of other works and movies and films and books and mashed them together and stirred them up And I think Kaiju Incorporated is a great follower of that legacy because it really reaches out to Kaiju fans and fans of Pacific Rim and other movies like that that are ripe for some people to play and even discover. And you know, once you've played these games, to go back and go, I wonder if, you know, maybe I should see that Godzilla vs. Megalon movie that the GM was talking about. Yes, you should.
Yes, you should. Okay, Jonathan, real quick, what are yours? Just so we give more movie recommendations. Godzilla movie, go.
Yeah, it's the original. Like, always the original. I mean, I can't get past it. It's so good.
Non-Kaiju movie. Or non-Godzilla movie, sorry.
Non-Godzilla movie? I've got a tie between Cloverfield and Pacific Rim, but for different reasons, because they explore different spaces within the same genre, you know? Pacific Rim is that outlandish, over-the-top nonsense, and Cloverfield is much more grounded and actually reminds me of the original Godzilla movie a little bit, because it's about the people and the struggle.
So my favorite Godzilla movie is Godzilla Giant Monsters All Out Attack, because...
That's a good one.
There are some good scenes in that. And my favorite non-Godzilla kaiju film is Gamera 3, The Revenge of Iris, because there's just so much stupid awesome that goes on in that film. And it does a really good job of closing out trilogy because, you know, you couldn't do that movie first. It really had to build on its two predecessors to even exist and tell its story. So I appreciated that because most of the time in kaiju films, it's just like, hey, those two things, go fight.
I also have to throw a shout out to the old SNK King of the Monsters video game.
Oh, my gosh. That one is great.
Where you had the wrestling match with the monsters. So many people love Rampage, but I feel like that one takes it. It was just one of those weird, like, two great tastes that go great together moments of of course they would be into giant monsters and pro wrestling.
I'm so excited. Some company is re-releasing a lot of Neo Geo games on the PS4. And I'm pretty sure that one's in queue, so.
Yes.
It's going to be a good day.
Okay, so let's get on topic here. Now that we've talked a lot about about kaiju movies, which this is not the kaiju movie podcast. I'm sure there's one out there.
Let's go ahead and shift into the system itself. So now, Kaiju Incorporated is based on the Fate system, but I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of changes here. So can you give us a quick rundown on the differences between Kaiju Inc. and the core Fate?
Sure. Kaiju Incorporated uses a variant of Fate Core, which is most famously implemented in the Atomic Robo RPG. Whereas Fate Core has a skill pyramid where you are amazing at one thing, pretty good at two things, all right at three things, okay at four things, and then everything else you don't really have a rating on. The big change from Fate Core that Kaiju Incorporated uses are skill modes, which are prepackaged skills. You pick one chunk as your top one, one chunk as your middle one, and one chunk as your low one, and then the individual skills within can kind of link up with each other and reinforce each other. In Kaiju Incorporated, each of these modes represents kind of the, you know, a broad category of work that one of the characters might do. You've got the crisis mode, you've got the lab mode, you've got the PR mode, and then you've got the office mode. So basically, you look at those four, and you kind of pick, well, which one of these three is my character best at? Which one of these three things is my character okay at? Which one of these things are they meh at? And which one are they completely terrible at?
Which is good, because it gives everybody a chance to sort of specialize into something, and there's enough variance there that people can kind of have their shtick and not really overlap with each other too terribly much.
Right. You want to have an element of niche protection, but even beyond those modes, each one of those modes is also connected to an aspect, which helps, you know, color that character's description of that mode. You know, one person who has an office mode of bucking for a promotion is going to play that differently than somebody whose office mode aspect is, my dad got me this job. and so there are more elements like that that help, you know, color the characters as you go. So that's one of the big differences. One of the other differences is the crisis board, as we like to call it, where when a kaiju attacks, you generate aspects that reflect the problems that the kaiju is causing, and then you decide in what order your team has to resolve those problems, and then the GM decides if you resolve them using the conflict rules, using the challenge rules, or using the contest rules. And then how you resolve those issues reflects back on your character at the end of the day, because the corporation that you're working for, you know, gets your paperwork and gets your report and goes, oh, well, you should have done this differently, son. And it's like, well, I was dangling from the mouth of a giant radioactive Gila monster, so I'm sorry I didn't have my Form 417B, guys.
I like that system a lot during my read-through, because it almost seemed like a way that everybody, it kind of is that fate thing where everybody sort of has a hand in generating what essentially is like the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
I like rules like that. I've had a thing where any system that does a bit where it makes the players actually get involved with doing stuff and not relies on me, like, just dreaming it up all out of my own head. I've been kind of oddly fascinated by systems like that. And this one definitely got that. Like, I was like, ooh, hey, this is one of those things where I don't have to work too hard.
Well, those systems, I think, push back against the idea that, like, the Dungeon Master or the Game Master is this be-all and end-all of, like, power and storytelling. RPGs are inherently social, and the idea that you've got the GM who has the five spiral notebooks full of their world that they're slowly revealing to you, and I think that's a notion that can be damaging to play experiences, because it can be very intimidating, and it makes people feel like, oh, I'm doing this wrong. Whereas something that's more collaborative is something that's more inviting and gets more people involved. And Fate in particular, you're right, does have that collaboration aspect at the table where you're sitting there, you know, figuring out what's going on. And by creating these elements, which are called danger aspects, it's also a way for, well, my guy is a, you know, totally awesome helicopter pilot. What cool scenes can I come up with that will let me be a cool helicopter pilot? And you worry less about characters who are built for a specific type of adventure feeling like they're left out if, oh, well, this adventure takes place underground, so sorry, helicopter pilot. We'll do a couple scenes from your vacation in Oahu, and you know, things are coming out and paying for the pizza and everything.
That was a rewarding role-playing experience, tipping the pizza driver.
I'm
so glad I showed up for game night, guys.
I think we all have stories like that where
of course we do.
This character that does this thing, and then everybody else does their stuff, and you're kind of like, I guess I'll order my gaming shelf while you guys work, you know, argue about who goes first and blah blah blah. So by having that collaborative aspect to it, it helps player buy-in, because they're telling you the stuff that they want to go do, and more often than not, the stuff that they tell you they want to go do is going to be more interesting to the whole table than you saying, here is the adventure, here are the paths that you're going to go down. Because when you read a lot of old school adventure, it's always fun to read that, like, well, if the players don't agree to go on the adventure, I don't know. make them do it, dang it. Like, they have to do it. And that's a lot easier. It's more natural if the players want to do it themselves rather than any sort of forced, you know, well, if they don't want to do it, you know, then the quest giver mocks them and locks them in a dungeon and they have to go do it anyway. Like, that's really not fun.
So let's talk about the setting of Kaiju Incorporated a little bit. So stop me if I'm wrong, but the gist of it is it's a world where Kaiju have been around for a very long time. It roughly follows the history of, you know, actual Kaiju films. So yeah.
Starts off in the 50s
with Thorzilla.
Almost like I did that on purpose.
I know. It's amazing. I was actually very impressed, because if you know your history of Kaiju movies, it does follow the history of Kaiju movies very well. And so basically there are several large corporations that are involved in Kaiju products. And in the card game, you play those large corporations, which my favorite by far is Monster Santo. Because just reading my Facebook feed, filling up with that corporation, shall we say, namesake,
mm-hmm.
made that one very entertaining to play. Yeah, the back half of the book has a whole bunch of stuff about, you know, the setting and all of this, everything. And I would, stop me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting the vibe that there's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing going on with the setting.
Oh, yes. I played the original card game, which is one of the other products that's coming out. There are two Kaiju Incorporated products coming out. There's a card game where you play the CEOs of these corporations who are producing these very dangerous kaiju-related products from the masses of dead kaiju that get flopped down by when the National Guard takes them out, or, you know, the giant robot punchers show up and do it. So they're trying to profit off of this by making these consumer products that are very dodgy and very like, yeah, sure, we tested it, no problem.
My favorite of which is kaiju burgers. Kaiju burgers are amazing.
It's very much a sort of satire of corporate policy and corporate, you know, oh yeah, no, we totally test that. We didn't actually test it. But we did the math and figured that any lawsuits that would come up from people complaining that we didn't test it would actually be less than the money that we would need to spend to test the product to see if it was safe. So we just said, screw it, we're going to release it. That colored my perception of it. So when I pitched the RPG to Evil Hat, my pitch was very simple. It was, this RPG is Pacific Rim meets Ghostbusters. It is this very dynamic setting with giant monsters and awesome kaiju mech, bate-bato is what we call the mechs. You know, they have these epic battles where they're punching each other and, you know, chucking. You know, you were talking about the stuff that happened in Pacific Rim, and you also talked about Cloverfield, which I also agree is a very good kaiju film. And that's kind of what I wanted to see was, okay, they have that big battle, the kaiju is over, the ace, you know, flies off and goes on the talk show and talks about his experiences, and you see them doing, you know, commercials, and they date actors and actresses from Hollywood. They have this big glamorous life. What about the poor schmucks that have to clean up afterwards? And that's who you play. You play the people that make sure that the paperwork is filed, that the fires are put out, that the buses are retrieved from the ocean, that the buildings are safe. You are at the forefront of rebuilding after a kaiju attack, which I thought was a very novel concept, because so many RPGs are about, we fight these guys and then we get stuff and then we fight more things and then we get stuff. And this was more about preventing disaster and picking up after disaster. And tongue in cheek as it may be, that's still a very heroic thing to do.
Also in the book is a very large chapter called Vogel's Kaiju Recognition Guide 7th Edition, which is all of the monstrous kaiju that exist in the Kaiju Incorporated setting.
I do have to say, I love the names, too. I mean, you go with Thorzilla, you've got
Gazonga.
Blomstera, Gazonga, and then you've also got Amanda.
Yeah, yeah. Amanda, the unfortunate byproduct of corporate testing gone awry, who's now just a supersized lady who is...
Right.
Fighting against the man.
Most of those are, I think all of them are actually in the card game.
Yeah, I recognized all of them from the card game.
Yeah.
So it was fun to kind of come up with short, interesting backstories for each of them. And that was kind of where I took it in the RPG. And there are also very simple rules for coming up with your own kaiju that if you want to do. I mean, you could literally pick up an episode of Power Rangers and, you know, grab one of those monsters and throw it in there, and it would take like 10 minutes, 5 minutes even,
Well, Fate's always really good with that, just
right.
Coming up with real simple ways to express really interesting, fun story stuff. Oh, mm-hmm. And my favorite thing is the Mecha Konga and then Queen Konga. Queen Konga is basically your gender swapped King Kong. And mm-hmm. They made a robot, like that lovely movie where they made a robot King Kong to fight King Kong. And the robot and Queen Konga fall in love, and they start hanging out together and going on dates and wrecking places together. And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. It's date night where we smash buildings.
Yay!
Well, it was funny because the two mecha monsters were a chance to explore the idea of, like, why is it a terrible idea to build robot versions of the monsters that you're trying to stop? Because it never really seems to work very well. Like,
especially ones that are autonomous. That is a theme that comes up in those those movies, that do not make them autonomous because it will go awry.
Because it's not going to go well for you. And so that was fun coming up with that stuff. Because that, I think, really helped define the history more deeply, as well as the companies too, because that you kind of had to figure out, okay, which of these companies built these things and how did they survive the inevitable failure of this massive project? And that's why both of them were actually built by the terrible corporation that no longer exists, because it was the, like, Z-Wave was meant to be the sort of, like, they made kaiju materials that probably weren't actually really kaiju related, but slap some marketing on them, and And like, they were born out of that sort of 2 a.m. commercial during the late show where a lot of people first saw these movies. And yes, buy the Pocket Fisherman, buy the George Kaiju Grill, or, you know, all that stuff that at 3 a.m. you're like, yeah, $19.99 doesn't sound that expensive. Maybe I should buy that. and so that was the corporation that eventually got into the business of building these giant robots, which I think were essentially started as marketing campaigns that then went horribly awry because that's what happens in the genre. It was a lot of fun looking at pieces of the card game, which came first, and then expanding them out into the genre and the experience of these types of movies and just being able to riff on that stuff and have a lot of fun.
So tell us, is this it for the Kaiju Incorporated line? Do we just get a card game and an RPG, or is there more in the wings?
I would say it depends on sales. If this thing blows up and people buy millions and millions and millions of, well, this is the RPG industry, so like thousands of products, then they'll look to do more stuff. I would love to do more stuff.
So, Rob, do you got anything upcoming that you can talk about yet that we should be looking out for?
Yeah. Well, I actually have a deadline this week for an adventure that I'm writing for Chill 3rd Edition. I did some work on the core book for Matthew McFarland, part of their last Kickstarter. I offered to do a Chill case that will be available for free on the internets. That's going to be coming out soonish. Pugmire is another thing that's going to be coming out soonish. The other major thing that's coming up is last year I kickstarted a comic book called Girls Heist Out. it is the story of a group of thieves, grifters, and con artists who band together to get revenge on their partner who sold them out by stealing his big scores before he can. And that's in the process of coming together, and I'm hoping that will be out sometime later this year. We just did approvals for the second issue's art, and I have the third script written right now, and I'm hoping that the production of it will be wrapped up by like the middle of the year. The first issue has already been sent to the Kickstarter backers, but we're doing four issues and then collecting them in a physical comic book, and it's very much in the style of Leverage or Ocean's 11, things like that. And I do have a playset coming out for the recently released Blades in the Dark RPG. Blades in the Dark is an RPG very much in the style of Thief or Dishonored or Peaky Blinders, where mm-hmm. you're playing a crew of criminals that's kind of carving turf out from other criminal groups in a fantasy industrial city. And one of the things that you do when you make your characters is you pick the type of crew that you are. So you might be shadows, which are like thieves, or bravos, who are like, you know, thugs that like break people's arms for protection or things like that. They just released the base PDF for that today. The grifters thing will probably come out later once they've kind of got the first book out the door. I also contribute regularly to Geek and Sundry. So look for my byline there. I like to highlight various RPGs that I enjoy and tabletop games. And I really like highlighting RPGs to let people know that there's more out there than just Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder. Those games are great. I love them. They do what they do very, very well. But I'm a big proponent of playing a variety of games because you don't just play Madden on your PlayStation. You have a bunch of different games and tabletop RPGs. I find that people who expand their horizons tend to enjoy it more. I think that's all that I have that I can talk about right now. I mean, this time of year is sort of when people slowly start to realize, oh man, Gen Con is in August. we were talking about doing that book this year, and we should probably hire some writers and get that going.
So, Rob, if people want to get a hold of you and follow your exploits online, what are the best ways that people can follow you?
Twitter is the best way to do it. I am at Robo Wieland, RoboWieland.
Awesome name.
That is, well, it's the
completely
it's the
didn't register with me. I was like, what middle name does he have that begins with O?
It's
man, I'm stupid.
Well, it's kind of the Rorschach test of Twitter handles. because it's either Robo-Wieland, which, you know, because it's Twitter, it's like a robot. It's either Rob-O-Wieland, which is kind of an inside joke with my wife because her last name is O'Neill. So, you know, we had discussed combining our names. Some people have read it as Robo-Wieland, which as a like an honorific of the late, great David Bowie. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? That too. Okay.
I'd go to that theme park.
Yeah, cool. I'd go to Robot Bowie World. And then if you take the Twitter handle and put .blogspot.com, that is a link to my blog where I try to link to most of the projects that I've been working on. I've fallen a little bit behind just because I've been doing a lot of work for Geek & Sundry, and I just kind of fell behind around Christmas.
All right, so Kaiju Incorporated, it is not, I just checked, it is not out in stores yet, but it should be soon, and there is a card game and a role-playing game for Fate Core.
And Rob, do you have MSRPs on those?
$20, $40 for the set. I got to write the RPG because I fell in love with the card game, so I highly recommend both.
Well, that brings us to the end of another amazing episode. Episode 11 is now in the can. Robert, any final thoughts that you want to share with us today?
You always forget when I have final thoughts, and then when I don't, and I just get to go, no.
You well, asked we gotta me. Keep the streak alive.
I hate you.
I get that a lot. I think you just dropped the mic. We'd like to, of course, to thank our amazing, amazing guest, Rob Wieland. Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us all the amazing info on Kaiju Inc.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope you guys have fun playing it, and I'm really excited to see it hit the public.
Well, as always, Robert, party on.
Party on. Yay, we're done.
Yay.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elefiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.